Welcome to this is going to be the first one in a series. I don't know how many parts there will be. Another story on awakening with the subtitle Expanding the Narrative of Higher Consciousness in Its Many Appearances. And I'm going to start with a little thing that I wrote just a few days ago. We all tell stories. Yeah, and stories, I think the reason why we do that is like stories are like maps to the mind. They kind of help us organize things. And the more abstract things get, stories actually is getting even more helpful. So you could say that stories is a tool to navigate bigger pictures, broader scapes, and it's a good way to simply remember things. And I think everyone tells stories. We tell them to ourselves, and we tell stories to others. And then we start to exchange stories, and those stories that are getting widely shared, I like to call them meta stories. And those meta stories tend to color the world. You know, it's like, you think of religion as a meta story. A religion tells you what you're allowed to think and not think, and what you're allowed to believe and not believe, and what you should talk about and what you should not talk about. And if you are part of, let's say, a political party, the political party has a story that tells you this is what we think, believe, do, and don't think, don't believe in our political whatever. So, and the really big meta stories, of course, form what could be called paradigms. Now, let's go over to awake people. I think my first kind of exposure to an awake guy is pretty much 40 years ago. And what I've found in these 40 years is whenever you meet someone who is awake, awake people also tell stories. And some people are telling stories saying you should not pay so much attention to stories. We probably heard that, don't listen to your mind, don't listen to the monkey mind, don't bother so much about the chatting of the mind going on. But what I think that actually awake people are trying to hint at is that simply that different stories, in this sense of that they are a tool, like maps to the mind, you're simply going to tell different stories because it's going to give us different realities, show us different realities. So I was just simply thinking that if we were looking for a more expanded or a more evolved world, we're going to look at more evolved and expanded stories. And that's where this sets off. I'm going to zoom out just to kind of give you a little bit idea of, this is here in the middle there, it says part one, Genesis today. I'm not sure if we're going to cover all of this stuff today, but this is what kind of popped up the last two or three days in my mind. Shortly about me. So I'm born 1964 in Sweden. I live in Germany since about 30 years, so more than half of my life. And I've lived, I think it's in five countries. And at one point I was calculating that I've worked for and with about 30 nationalities. And the biggest thing in my life has actually always been about this awakening thing. It's like, what is... Now, actually, first it started with, I just wanted to be normal. I didn't feel very normal. I felt like a real misfit, and I just wanted to be part of normality, so to say. And The only people that I found that seems to have an idea about normality were people who were deeply interested in spirituality. So it's kind of became a spiritual search. So I think I was calling myself a seeker until 2014. And there I had a first, I think it should be called a Satori. I don't know. It was like for about 3 hours. I was kind of totally out of the story of Ola. The setting as such was recorded, so I could listen to this afterwards a few months later. And what had appeared to my mind as maybe a 5-second shift of some kind, in reality, it actually took about 50 seconds. So, and the first thought that I remember as I kind of came back to this kind of time thing was like, who the fuck is Ola? It was like, who the fuck is Ola? You know, it was like, it was so clear that this I is not this personality Ola. And I was pretty much exactly 50 years old. And it was a bit weird because I was wondering, like, I've been sharing this body with this Ola guy for 50 years. And I didn't even know. You know, it was quite an interesting moment. And then after a few hours, something happened. The next morning I woke up. And then for a few months, it was kind of like a more returning to, well, the normality, the identification with the personality, and so on. And after that, spiritual search stopped being a kind of hobby or a leisure time. It was like, this is it. This is what I'm going to spend the rest of my life doing, basically. So, moving over to why telling another story on awakening, because there are already quite a lot of people out there that you can go to and listen to that tell their interpretation, their version, their understanding of what is awakening about. The very first thing that I wrote down was actually, it is kind of fun to talk about it. I mean, it's a bit like you're talking about awakening, and it's a little bit like kind of the pornography version of awakening. It's like, it's not the real thing, but it's can be quite hot and interesting to even just talk about it. To some degree, it's exciting, like I was just sharing before we started. I find this interesting. And I think a pretty important aspect here is what I called the old or traditional, there the explanation mark should be. There is an old or many old and traditional stories of awakening. And then there is or are more new and more contemporary possible stories of awakening. And I don't see those newer or more contemporary stories that much. Or you see people kind of addressing them, but then often the language kind of falls back to what then could be said old and traditional. So I'm going to zoom over here. So one thing that I thought is like, okay, this is about expanding understanding. Expanding understanding is not exchanging. It's not a better understanding. It's just kind of like more different shirts in your cupboard. It's like you have more to choose between. And then I think also that we are at about 8 billion people worldwide. And since roughly the beginning of this century, there are the whole thing of esoteric, new age, awakening, spirituality, it's kind of exploding the last 20 years. And with about 8 billion people around the world, I was thinking that, well, maybe there will be a few people who are at least interested in listening to another story on awakening. So we're going to navigate. Why? So from this thing that I just wrote or told in the beginning, is like stories. Stories are like symbols to the mind. I think we can agree upon that. We could say that language in itself is a symbolic representation. Let me see. And one possible thing is that, especially when we talk about the awakening path, it is a very individual kind of inner experience. Yeah. And it's like, it's not really possible to share it. And it's like, whenever I sit and there is, or anyone who sits and there is kind of whatever that awakening or whatever the depth of a meditation is, you can talk about it, but you can't share the actual experience. You can talk about it, but you cannot share the actual experience. And if we look closer, even we ourselves internally, you know, there is something there which is like, wow. And then we try to find a word for that. We try to kind of like, what is this like? And then I might be like, oh, I could call this light, or I could call this love, or I could call this pure awareness, or I could call this, I don't know what, but it's like, but immediately there is a process from a, let's call it a pure experience that we translate into words, or we might translate it into pictures, or we translate it into symbols. Now, those words, pictures, and symbols, then we can start to share those with other people. But I think it's always good to remember that the very innermost individual experience, you cannot share that one. And that's where I came to what I was called. So I could talk about awakening. Let's say I would talk about awakening as an oak tree. And if we move out, So let's say I have an oak tree out in the garden. It's a beautiful, wonderful, green, lush. It's grown, balanced in all directions. It's healthy. And I could say that in this picture, you know, consciousness and human and the body is like the trunk, and emotions and feelings would be like the branches. And that kind of awakening is kind of like the flowering or the blossoming of, and then we have the leaves. And if you look at leaves, you could say, well, leaves are leaves, aren't they? It's like all leaves are kind of greenish and all leaves are the same. That would be like a kind of generalized way of talking about awakening. Or we could start to look at each and every individual leaf, and each and every individual leaf is different than the other leaves, hinting again, it's an individual inner experience. Now, we're going to stay with the oak tree. Let's say that any one of you guys, that when you look out through your window, there is an old, almost dead, grayish, small little oak tree. It's been hit by the lightning. It doesn't get water. It's dying away. And you would go like, if awakening is like an oak tree, I don't want it. Yeah. But the thing, if we have an oak tree, you know, we could make a picture, we could share it. And I could say, look, this is the kind of oak tree that I'm talking about. And you could say it's like, oh, now I understand why you find the symbol of an oak tree so interesting. But in the moment, gross matter, sharing a picture. Yeah, that's what I just But let's say that I would instead talk about awakening, not as an oak tree, but as ultimate freedom. Yeah. We can't really share what we mean by freedom. I can't make a picture of freedom and send it to you. And I was thinking, like, if anyone just hear the word freedom, and if there's a guy who sits in a prison, maybe freedom is just getting out of prison. That might be the first association. If you're in a marriage, but you're unhappy, maybe freedom means to just get divorced and get out of that. If you are a bored pupil in school, it's just like, get out of school. It's, you know, freedom is from something that is limiting. If you have a lousy 9-to-5 work, just getting out of there, freedom can be like, so when we talk about freedom, we don't really know, when people hear the word freedom, what they actually associate in their, boom, 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 in their inner individual experience. We don't know that. So I might talk about freedom and I might mean something like this gorgeous, lush oak tree. And you are sitting there and going, freedom is like this gray old, but what? I'm not interested. So one of the things, oh yeah, freedom. We have like freedom from something. We have freedom to something. And then we have freedom just as in freedom. Okay, so I think that was it for here. Let me zoom out. Just kind of hold on to this freedom thing. Let me think, where is this supposed to move on now? Oh yeah, there we have this. So there I have this thing, what I just mentioned, think about the leaves. As a bunch, they are the same, but if you look closer, they're all individual. So you could also say that awakening is not the same to me as it is to you. And with this inner personal experience, whatever we do as a translation, it's going to be different. And the thing is that we are actually going to, mostly when we talk about awakening, we are not having gross matter like the oak tree, but we are having a very abstract wording, like, what the fuck is actually awakening? It's a very, very abstract word. And like with freedom, you know, it's like, what do you mean with awakening? Well, to me, it's like this, this, and this. And if you would share what you mean about awakening, you would probably come up with different words. And if we follow that line on, we can go like, actually, maybe, you know, one of the guys here is a native German speaker. One person is a native Swedish speaker. One is a native Spanish speaker, and one is a native English speaker. Maybe we first actually start in our own mother tongue. Yeah. And translating, you know, especially those of us who operate in several languages, we know that you can't, translating language is not just translating words. In the moment it gets a little bit more complicated, we're immediately also kind of translating culture. And if we think about it, we are actually right now talking English, and we're not talking Shakespearean English. We're not talking medieval English. It's not English how it's going to be in 500 years. So it's even an English that is caught in this time. And I find that interesting because sometimes, you know, there are parts of the Bible that when you read those stories and you think about those stories in the context of our modern world, they sound a bit like, You know, they're like, what is this thing about Jesus feeding 5,000 people with, what was it, 3 fishes and 5 pieces of bread or something like that? That's a strange story to us today, isn't it? It doesn't make sense. But if you think back 2,000 years and you think about the culture of those time and the society, and these were people, you know, like we are basically since about 50 to 100 years, the first people who live most of the time and we don't know starving. But if you go back in history, starving has always been part of life. People know starving. So if you bring something in which is kind of like symbolically feeding a big amount of people with something that is a few fishes and a few breads, maybe this is saying it's like, maybe it's actually a story saying that Jesus was using normal, simple words, but it was feeding the mind the way 3 fishes and 5 bread could feed 5,000 people. And this would be a story that would make sense in a society that knows starving a lot. Hope this makes sense to you guys. Because I think that when we are looking at awakening and then another story of awakening and maybe a new and more contemporary story of awakening, we're going to keep that in the back of our heads, that awakening has a lot of old wording to it, and maybe we need to find new wording. So zooming out, okay, so this is a little jump now, but it's going back to what I said originally, that stories are like maps to the mind. Yeah. Now, we could say that any story is like a map. You could call it a model. You could call it a school of thought. You could call it a theory. You could call it more general, that it's about symbols. You could call it a system. But all these kind of things, they're basically there to help our minds to organize big and complicated and a lot of things into stuff that we can kind of remember. It's one of the reasons, for instance, why I'm using these kind of mind maps, because that's for me the quickest ways to organize a lot of information. And this is basically a tool to organize a lot of facts, a lot of thoughts. Now, when we think about anything like a map, and like language in itself is a map, English, contemporary language, is a map, Swedish is a parallel map, German, Spanish would be other parallel maps. When we think about maps, you know, some maps are very detailed and some maps are more overview. And I think a lot about when we talk about abstract things like awakening, that one source of misunderstanding is simply the level of zooming in and zooming out. And I have an example for that one. Let me see. Oh, yeah. So I'm going to zoom in soon. So almost any city on the planet probably has a street that is called the main street, Hauptstraße in German. So let's say that someone says, let's meet in the Hauptstraße, let's meet in the main street. That's a very pretty much zoomed in thing. Yeah, let's meet in the cafe in the main street number 5. That's pretty much zooming in. But this assumes that we are both in the same city. But if you are, let's say, in Berlin and I am in Cologne, both cities have a main street or a Hauptstraße. But, you know, and it's again, this is back to the oak tree. So if I have a look at the map of this is Bielefeld. Bielefeld is a German city. Somewhere there is a Hauptstraße. This is Düsseldorf. Düsseldorf also has a Hauptstraße, and Essen and Frankfurt and Cologne and Potsdam and Wuppertal. They all have a Hauptstraße.
Berlin now, has even five Hauptstraßes, by the way.
Berlin has five Hauptstraße, exactly. So you need to know what part of Berlin it is. Now, again, this is, of course, pretty... Now, can I leave this one? This is, of course, again, like with the oak tree, when we talk about the Hauptstraße, the main street in any real city, we remember to reference, is it Berlin or is it Cologne? But when we are talking about, let's go back to freedom, you know, when we just talk about freedom, and if we don't really know who the persons we are talking about to, maybe the unhappy married couple are not much thinking about freedom the way the bored pupil is. The unhappy married couple will think about, let's get divorced. And if we talk a lot about abstract wording, we tend to forget to come back to that mutual referencing. What is it that we are actually having as the shared basis? And it's easy to get lost in abstract wording. And I think we should kind of remember that when we are talking about models of higher consciousness, models of awakening, it's like some models will be more zoomed in, some will be more zoomed out. And I would say that any story about awakening, any story about higher consciousness, it probably has its level of usefulness. But we need to remember that when someone says freedom in one model that might be zoomed out, the word freedom in another model that is more zoomed in might mean something different. And I love it that we are actually having exactly those three languages, the four languages that are present right now here. It's like, so when we take the English has two words. It has consciousness and it has awareness. In Swedish, and I think in Spanish, there's only one word. Is that right, Lucia? Or do you have two totally different words?
Awakening and consciousness.
No, awareness and consciousness.
Yes, there's one word that is twisted. So, yeah. For example, our notes says something funny that you don't really get by awareness.
Yeah,
you could say darse cuenta or conciencia.
Yeah. Swedish only has one word. English has two words, consciousness and awareness. But the way, if you look closer at it, English uses those words quite a lot mixed up, I would say, from my kind of like Swedish-German background. And if you go to German, you have three words, or actually even four words. And in German, you can be really specific about Bewusstsein, Bewusstheit, Gewahrsein, and you could potentially create a fourth word, Gewahrheit, but that word doesn't even exist. Now, quite often when I sit in any kind of, when there is like talking about awareness and consciousness, and when there start to be kind of what I feel being misunderstanding, I do think that it's actually because it's really hard to really, really define what is consciousness exactly and what is awareness exactly and what is consciousness not, that awareness is instead and the other way around. And then you have people who are like in this awakening business, like I think it's Rupert Spira. I heard him saying he uses awakening and consciousness as the same. So I'm just kind of bringing this up to hint at the possibility that maybe actually any abstract word is a full individual experience. You know, just remember freedom. Maybe if we would say love, maybe if we would say beautiful, maybe if we would say gorgeous, maybe if we would say happy, maybe if we would say angry, maybe if we say, it's like, we don't really know exactly what you or anyone exactly associate with those abstract words. There is no way that we can make the picture of the oak tree and share it. So maybe in the moment we enter any abstract wording, we are actually playing around in some kind of individual inner experience. And all of this is kind of like, you know, it's like I'm trying to bring up this awareness for how words can be very, very delusional. And when you start to put a lot of words together, you start to have a theory or a map. It's pretty easy to get lost. So now I'm going to move on to... okay, so we're going to move on to this one. The world does not need awakened assholes. What do I mean with that? Well, this comes back to, let me see, this subtitle says expanding the narrative of higher consciousness in its many appearances. And then I said somewhere, I said something what I called the old traditional awakening. And then I said new contemporary possible stories of awakening. This is all hinting at higher consciousness in its many appearances, is that awakening is maybe only one expression of higher consciousness. And if someone who is a real serious asshole before awakening, that person could actually awaken. And what quite a lot of kind of research that has been done the last 10, 15, 20 years about awakened people is that, for instance, morality doesn't seem to change. So if someone who is what I'm called an asshole before, it's probably going to be an awakened asshole afterwards. And there is somewhere in Asian literature, there is a book called Zen at War. And this is hinting at an history of awakened Zen masters who would kind of use their, well, whatever kind of advantages their awakened state would give them to become like really, really efficient war leaders. It's like there is nothing that says that because you awaken, you become a loving, caring person. In other words, if you were an asshole before awakening, afterwards you are maybe going to be an awakened asshole. Now I'm going to contradict myself and I'm going to say this has little to do with assholes and it has a lot to do with other higher consciousness. And I think that this is crucial because I think this is kind of higher states of consciousness that are very similar to traditional awakening, and that's an important one, kind of newer, available, higher states of consciousness can be very similar to traditional states of consciousness. It's in other words saying that awakening in its more traditional or old way is maybe around since 50,000 years, whereas higher stages of consciousness are maybe only available since about 100 years. Now I'm going to make a little pause here, because we are now about 35 minutes into theoretical talking. And from here on, it would now enter into those 100 years, latest 100 latest years of higher stages of consciousness, which would be looking into Ken Wilber integral theory. It would be looking into, for instance, the works of Terry O'Fallon, into Peter Mary. But I'm going to stop that one for a little while and go back to my face here. And I'm just going to shortly actually pause the recording.